I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples.
The podcast.
The podcast. She likes to say that. She really does. Today we have a really cool story on multiple levels and some very, a lot of similarities between Julie and myself. We have Sarah and Asa Rosenblatt. And if anyone was paying attention to the news a couple of years ago or reads People magazine, you would have read about Sarah's story. And I'm not going to talk about it because I'm going to let her tell it. But we're also going to spend some time talking about the effects of what Sarah learned as an adult and how that's affected. And the two of them have worked through that and built their own family. So Sarah and Asa, welcome aboard. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
No, this is going to be great. We're really excited to have you. As you know, we're adoptive parents. So your story particularly resonated with us. But rather than me talk, Sarah, tell the folks a little bit of your background.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I was born in Santiago, Chile in the late 70s during the dictatorship of Pinochet, but adopted by 7.5 months by a Jewish white family and was raised in Maryland. So grew up in that area. I babysat for some of your friends, I believe.
And, yes.
spent very happy years in my childhood in Maryland, went to North Carolina for college and ended up meeting Asa.
Is that where you guys met in college?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. He had already graduated and uh-huh. I was on the bowling team and needed a person to bowl with and met Asa.
Yep. Nice.
10 pins or duck pins, just out of curiosity? Imagine 10 pins. Yeah. 10 pins. Duck pins are only around here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So Sarah, so you grew up knowing that you were adopted. That was never a secret or anything that you didn't know. And how did you feel about, being adopted growing up?
Mixed feelings. I would say that, I definitely resonated with the gratefulness and knowing what I was growing up with. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of grief. I mm-hmm. now can see as an adult that all the tears and the behaviors and feeling different in my own family because they are Jewish and white mm-hmm. Really was hard. It was a grief process. And so now as an adult, I look back and I'm like, oh, there was a lot of loss.
Yeah. Yeah. So you experienced, we talk about the core seven issues of adoption. So you've hit a lot like loss, grief, identity, missing pieces, feeling different. And then tell us a little bit about, so you grow up, you know, you're adopted, you're processing that, working through that. And then you get another little twist and turn in your life where somebody reached out to you and said, hey, you could be part of this, or tell us how that all happened.
So to keep it fairly brief, as an adult, I never really wanted to reach out and find family. It was always a fantasy and it was perfect right there, mm-hmm. just as this fantasy bubble. And I had my own children, almost 15-year-old, and I have a 9.5-year-old. And during those times, I thought about, this is my first biological family that I'm meeting, mm-hmm. my children. So there was a lot of questions around there, but I learned about an article 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, that my brother had given me. So my adopted brother that I was raised mm-hmm. with, from the New York Times. And it indicated that most Chilean adoptees between early 1970s and up to 1990s were possibly stolen. Wow. And so they highlighted a couple of adoptees, including a man named Tyler Graff. And that article just really opened up the possibility that even though I knew I was adopted, and you think that there could be other reasons for being adopted, you know, like it wasn't always a choice, or I never thought stolen baby.
Right.
And I reached out to the organization in the article and found out very quickly that I was a stolen child from Chile.
Wow. And so you had already had your own kids by then. You're already in a relationship. And so how did you process that? And then I want to hear kind of what Asa saw and how, you know, how he was along for the journey.
Yeah. It was the hardest 3 months of my life. And even afterwards, even thinking of it, obviously, like I'm getting emotional because it's a lot to take on. You know, it was a wound that was really well covered, that I had lots of scars over, and the possibility of having to look into if I was stolen, if my biological mother was told that I was dead. It just cracked open this wound that I didn't really think was there. It was so deep. I did a really great job of hiding and masking and bearing it down, and light had shone into that wound, and I needed to find out.
Just one, one backgroundy kind of thing. Your adoptive parents had no idea, obviously, that you had been stolen at birth.
They didn't know. Everything on the American side with their lawyers was legal.
Right.
And what they received from Chile was all stamped and marked and all the signatures.
So Asa, you're married at this point. You obviously know that, you know, that, you know, Sarah's adopted. That was, you know, something that you were supportive of. And what happened? What were you thinking when she was getting this news and sort of like the unfolding?
I know for us and for me and the conversations that Sarah and I had had, it was really more a matter of that there were other people out there that had been wronged, and, you know, that there's some woman who, you know, potentially thought that Sarah was dead at birth, and, you know, this person's out here living this great life and, you know, being who she is, and, you know, this woman has, you know, for, you know, at this point, 40-something years, had this sort of sadness in her heart, and there's this whole, you know, untold story to her life. So it was really kind of an urgency to right that wrong and like reach out and do our best to find this person.
And how old were your children at the time when you learned this?
Max would have been 12 and Sid would have been around 6.
Okay. So, you know, not little, not tiny, like you're explaining why mom's going through this, why you're like, there's a lot
of questions of, why, you know, what's, you know, there are, especially our smallest one is very sort of emotionally aware and, you know, would have lots of questions. Why is mom upset? What's going on? And, you know, we're very honest in our, about our feelings and our family. So, you know, we of course talked about, you know, Sarah was discovering all this stuff about her life and there's a lot of things that happened in her childhood and, you know.
So Sarah, did you, ultimately, did you find your birth mom and tell us sort of about your journey after, you know, figuring out this, you know, sort of mind jolting news?
Yeah. I, like I mentioned, there were organizations in the article and, with the Chilean NGO, which is called Nos Buscamos, they found my family because of the way that Chile has their like social security number set up. It's called a run number or a route number. And so they were able to tell me you have your mom still alive and you have 6 siblings. And
I just got chills when, I just got chills. Like,
in my paperwork, I always knew about an older sister. So I grew up with that information of an older sister, and she was the first person that I met, and her name's Rosa. And, you know, I have sisters, both a sister-in-law, sister-in-laws and my sister that I was raised with. And those are all very special relationships. But there is nothing like the sister that I, you know, just met, and we look similar.
Yeah.
And, we just have a really special bond. I always knew about her, but she always sensed in her spirit that I existed. They didn't know that I.
Yeah. So were they, she's older. Did they tell her that the baby died? Is that, was the story?
No. My birth mother was coerced into signing paperwork. But then I was stolen from her. Right. So they just wanted to make sure, I guess, from the hospital that she did not return to her employers with a second baby. So I was stolen from her after 4 days in the hospital.
They misled her and told her that they would kind of hold on to Sarah for a few months and then she'd be able to pick her up. Mm. And then they immediately took her out of the country.
Wow.
I mean, when we were first kind of discovering this, there was a Zoom call that I remember where all the siblings had kind of jumped in, and it was the most surreal thing to see, you know, six other pictures of Sarah's siblings that were just, you know, looked almost like pictures of Sarah through different points of her life. You know, like the resemblance is unreal. It was really amazing.
My biological mother, like
out of all the children,
she looks the most like her mother.
I am. Really?
Yeah.
So have you met your birth mom in person?
We have. We were fortunate to go to Chile in May of 22. So just 5 months after the article.
Wow.
2 or 3 months after meeting them by Zoom or whatever platform we used. Yeah. And I got to meet them in person. So she lives in rural Chile and spent the day with her and two siblings. And I spent the whole trip with my older sister, Rosa, and meeting another sibling.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So let me ask you this, Asa. So you have your family. You're here in suburban Maryland.
In North Carolina.
Oh, you're in North Carolina. Sorry about that. In North Carolina, close, you know, just a few states. You're in North Carolina, you're raising your kids, and things were good at home. And then all of a sudden this curveball comes down the path and your wife gets taken off of her pace a bit, right? To sort of put it kindly or in racing terms. Tell me a little bit from your perspective, you know, what challenges did that create for you as the dad, as the husband? Well, and it's not just her going through it, obviously, because now it's most particularly personal to your wife, but also there's others there in the household that are going through it as well.
Sure. I mean, for me, you know, my role is, you know, just to be supportive, for sure. So I was like, let's do it. You know, like we can go to Chile. Like we can definitely make this happen. And that was really like my goal, is to, you know, make sure that whatever she wants and feels comfortable to do, you know, just to make sure that I'm able to make that happen. And, you know, in Chile, like at first she was thinking about going by herself. Mm-hmm. And the contact that we had, you know, was like, you should not go by yourself. Cause not only like there's a language barrier, obviously, cause they're speaking Spanish, but also that, you know, you need somebody that is kind of like a home person to process this as you're going through this. I think, you know, kind of at the end of the day, we can sit and talk about, you know, everything that we've learned and, you know, all the things that she's experiencing. You know, I mean, obviously for me, for my part, I was going to Chile was great, and meeting all these people who, you know, took us, luckily the experience was really good too, that the family we met, there wasn't any real hesitation. They were thrilled to meet us and open arms. It was really a wonderful experience.
Do you guys speak Spanish?
A little bit. Yeah. Un poquito, yeah.
Un poquito. Yeah. Okay. Enough to get through as tourists.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But in terms of the emotional speaking, fortunately, my nephew, Rosa's son, is bilingual. So we leaned on him a lot, and we leaned on the director of Nos Buscamos a lot. She's bilingual.
Right.
And she's a Chilean adoptee, but she was adopted within Chile.
Right.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you handled the discussion with your kids. I understand they're different in ages, but I mean, to a young child, when hearing your story, that could be scary. So I'm curious to know how you, as a mom and a dad, sort of explain, you know, aside from moms going through stuff, you know, what, if anything, and when did you tell them and how did you tell them?
Well, we talk a lot about adoption in our family. My brother is adopted. Sarah and I have a situation kind of where our families are twins to each other, where the youngest member of both of our families are interracial adoptees.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, we talk about adoption and kind of just what happens to families and how people end up in different situations where they are adopted. So it's something we talk a lot about.
Yeah. I was just thinking that, like, through a starting point that was not new, you know, about adoption, that they were my first biological family that I met. And then many years later, speaking to children about meeting my family, it was my feelings were not hidden. There was a lot of crying, both happy tears and sad tears. When I was meeting my family, it was all like happy tears, but, you know, just letting it out. It's okay to let it out, you know. I'm not embarrassed by it.
And even encouraging our kids to talk about, you know, experience the emotions that their mother is experiencing with them is really good and, you know, helpful and just for their development and everything as well. It's just, it's good to, you know, just include your kids in your experience your life, you know, good and bad and complicated and all the great things that go along with it.
Yeah. And Sarah, so are your parents still alive, your adoptive parents?
My mother is. My father had died shortly after we got married.
Mm-hmm. So what was this journey like for her?
I think you're best at answering that. It's complicated, right?
Right. I mean, she has been very supportive.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely very supportive.
No doubt.
Right. And then, you know, has reached out in the ways that she's able to Sarah's family in Chile as well. I think that a lot of it is the kind of idea that she somehow has done something wrong without knowing about it is something that she thinks about. Because again, on her end, everything was great. Because why would Chile be a bad actor? Why would the government of Chile at the time be a bad actor? So, you know, everything up to the American side is right. And then as soon as it goes over the Chile side, then there's all these kind of like, you know, questionable practices. So I feel like, you know, especially when her father was alive, he was the kind of person who would have driven him nuts to think about, oh, I missed something, right? Like somehow our actions, as well intentioned as they are, were involved in this wrongness, you know, even though they did nothing wrong.
They wanted a baby. They wanted a child.
Right.
It's not today. People, I think, don't understand 20 and 30 and 40 years ago that how different the world was. It wasn't, you know, we didn't know what was going on overseas in a moment's notice.
Right.
And so we didn't learn about the atrocities in Chile and what Pinochet had done during his reign there until he was about finished.
Right.
Yeah. And certainly your mom and your adoptive mom and dad would never have known.
Right.
Right. And they were thankful to have a baby and everything. The stamps were stamped where they're supposed to stamp. And they had this beautiful little girl.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it definitely has to be for her. I'm sure there's this, like you said, there's this sort of what did I miss? How could I miss it? But the reality is she couldn't have seen it even if she was looking for it.
Yeah.
Right. And like you mentioned, I mean, that was 40 years ago.
So
questions that I have, she's like, I don't remember.
Yeah. We've lived a whole life since then.
Yeah. That's super hard. And I know a lot of adult adoptees adoptees in general have some anxiety around searching because they're afraid of what their adoptive parents will think. And so it's always interesting because, you know, David and I are the adoptive parents in the scenario that we live. And we've always been supportive of, you know, finding and pursuing relationships with birth family, but not all adoptive parents are.
Right.
So that's why I was wondering sort of where your mom is coming from and how that was.
Yeah,
so it was originally your brother that brought this to you. And what has he been like in terms of, was he also adopted?
No, my two older siblings are biological to my parents, just like Asa, biological, and his sister to his parents. I'm sorry, the question was what?
Yeah, so what's your sort of tell us about your brother's role, and was it just that he gave you this information, or does he somehow feel part of this journey with you?
Absolutely. I'm just curious. Absolutely. He is definitely on this journey. I mean, everyone that's in my life is a part of this journey. Anyone who's been close with me or I feel close with, I kind of kept this as like a guarded secret for a little while. Like I don't share my story on social media much, because the people who are close to me and that I feel close with, I share the story with. Yeah. And that was kind of me controlling the situation, right?
Sure.
But my brother and I are close, and we've been close for a long time. And he's very supportive, and he called almost every day.
While it's going down.
While like during the worst of times, or he would text and check in.
Yeah.
Very supportive, and you know, we all process it differently. And I think he's a writer, so I think getting my story, getting the pieces of the story, like Asa mentioned, my dad was a researcher, researching into some of the things, I think that helped him too.
How would you say that it is, you know, I know it's affected you in so many ways, but in terms of being, you know, a partner to Asa, being a mom to your kids, how do you think this whole journey has affected you?
I think it definitely brought us closer. You know, we got to go visit my homeland and see all the wonderful sights and develop these relationships. And I wasn't doing it alone. I was doing it with my best friend, my partner. We've been able to travel to some really wonderful places together with and without children. So hopefully the next trip will be with children to Chile. But it's going with my best friend and the ups and downs and really exploring resiliency, I think, of the marriage and the partnership.
Yeah. I love that.
One question I didn't ask you earlier. Your bio sibs, they were all raised together, or did they, any of them experience the same thing that you did, where they were taken at birth?
No, I was the only one adopted. There's a big span of ages between the oldest, who's a year and a half older than me, and the youngest are in their early 20s.
Okay.
So many of them were raised together, biologically, fully biological to each other. And then there's the three sisters
that are oldest,
which includes my oldest sister, me, and another sister. And we're very close with each other and checking in and,
yeah, the circumstances of the family, just like anybody else, really has changed over the 25 years that they've all been born. So, you know, the younger ones, they live in this smaller town and they all kind of are very close with each other there. But the older ones that were born in the big city, Santiago, you know, their life was very different. You know, there was biological mother was in a very different place when they were born. You know, she was much younger. Situations of their life were very different. So there's a huge span of experiences in that.
So this is a question that isn't really specific to your situation around the adoption, but we've interviewed a lot of couples around what makes couples strong. And our second book is called Secrets of Strong Couples, where we interviewed.
There you go.
You guys could be in that book. So what we found is that people that go through really difficult things end up in the end, you know, with a stronger bond, right? We never wish these things to happen, you know, infidelity, losing a child, whatever it is that happened. And what we really tried to pin down in the book was what were the things that they did together that bonded them through this really difficult experience. So I want to ask you specifically, what do you guys do as a couple to keep connected, whether it's, you know, in the midst of all this or before or after? What are the things that you guys do together?
The first thing that comes to my mind is that we walk the dogs together every day.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. A lot. You got to see one of them.
Yes.
So it's like the simple things that we do with each other and for each other, right. But also, you know, planning dates.
Mm-hmm. Very, yeah. I mean, we even like, we always talk about our mini dates where, you know, once or twice a month, we like, you know, there's a little wine bar. We just go sit out on their little deck and have a glass of wine and like sort of process, you know, what's been happening in the past week and just kind of like run, you know, make sure, oh, is this okay? You know, how do you feel about this that happened? You know, and you know, it's very little inane things, but they're just the little sort of like minutia of life. And we just kind of like run it back every now and then, and check in with each other.
Okay. I love that. So really, you know, making sure that you're connecting on a regular basis. And it sounds like you guys talk a lot too. Yeah. Like you're big communicators.
Yes.
Somebody had said something that David really liked, which was the magic is in the mundane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's what you're talking about. It's the dog walks. It's the sitting on the deck, having a glass of wine. It's, you know, it's not anything big. It's not a, you know, you do this or open champagne or whatever. Right. It's really about what you do on a daily, regular basis.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what was interesting. And hearing you talk about it, the same thing just sort of reinforces what we found in our research and talking to the couples that ended up, it's those that ended up in the book and those that did not, which was, there wasn't like this magic pill. Right. There was not some really secret thing that they could pass along. It was just that, I mean, for the most, some folks relied on faith to a certain degree, but others didn't. But the one consistency is just what you just talked about, which was making sure that you made that time, whether it's a speed date on your deck, however, walking the dogs, to make that time to make sure that you connect and communicate. And there she is again.
There's Bessie.
That's all right.
Like your ring.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's really, really great. And we want to congratulate both of you.
Thank you.
It's some story. Yeah, you know, it really is. And you should be proud of what you've gone through, and proud that you have been able to sort of educate your family throughout all of this. I mean, these kids are going to grow up with information and knowledge and that many kids won't know and won't understand. That will help them, I'm quite certain, as they face their own challenges going down the road.
Yeah, there's a like one thing that I really learned through, you know, being a part and watching Sarah throughout this is the sort of complexity that's going on in everybody. There's, you know, there's so many layers that I learned about Sarah and just about, you know, myself and families going through all this that, you know, you're not even really aware of. And luckily being at a place in our relationship where we're able to talk about all of this pretty freely and we're good communicators with each other after 20 years of marriage, that, you know, you really learn a lot through it. And there's, you know, being able to really touch on all these different layers is really helpful. And really wonderful thing to.
And I think for all the folks out there that are listening, there's a lot to be taken from this. It's a unique situation, unique circumstances, but the way to work through it ought not be all that unique. And we really thank you guys for coming on. It's been a great talk. We hope that people listen and learn. We are The Bullets, www.thebullets, thebullitts. We can be found on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube,
LinkedIn,
all those platforms,
all the platforms,
pain in the neck, at The Bullets. And as always, we like to close with, this is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, y'all.
Julie Bullet is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullet is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.